What would really motivate you? What do you want to be known for? And by the way, it doesn't have to be changing the world. It could just be, being the best you can be in what you do. And then it's like making sure you're doing that every single day.
Okay, welcome back, gang, to Future Proof, episode number, what number is it this week? 141, episode number 141. I'm Bill Sheridan. Pleased to meet you. Welcome to the show. Speaking of which, this show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Great show for you this week. We're entering kind of a weird area. I'm speaking with a fellow podcaster this week, and I know what you're thinking. Bill's officially run out of stuff to talk about here. He's resorting to interviewing other podcasters, and normally I'd agree. It's usually a sure sign that you don't have anything else useful to say, right? Sort of like when journalists start interviewing each other and there's really no more news to talk about. But that's not where we are. No, quite the opposite. In fact, my guest this week is Andrew Codd, who hosts a podcast called Strength in the Numbers, which caters to our own crazy world of accounting and finance. Andrew's based in Ireland. He's just outside of Cork in the southwest region of Ireland. He's an author, speaker, coach, trainer. He's also a senior member of after sales finance operations for Dell. What I love really is that, as the host of a podcast across the pond, as we Americans say way too frequently, is that Andrew brings a decidedly international flavor to the issues and trends that our profession is facing, and his perspectives, they're fresh and eye-opening. Here's an example. The name of this podcast, Strength in the Numbers. And we talk a little bit about this in this week's show, in fact, but there's a double meaning there, right? It refers quite obviously to accounting and finance, but it also seems to me that it refers to the importance of, relationships, connections, collaboration, the human element of what we do, which I've been hearing more and more frequently from some pretty renowned names in global leadership. Let's start with this, in fact. This is from a friend of mine who also happens to be an international leadership expert. His name is Emmanuel Gobio. And back near the start of the pandemic, Emmanuel wrote an article called The ABCs of Leadership in Crisis. And he pointed to the importance of that human connection in a leader's relationship with their team, right? Things like empathy, understanding. Here's what he said at the time. He says, quote, "We need to start with appreciating where our followers are at. Nothing can be achieved without an understanding of their needs and wants, as well as hopes, where they are now and where you will take them. This requires two key elements. The first," he says, "is compassion, which is about followers feeling that you get them. You are neither detached nor aloof. As followers, we do not want you to be one of us. We need you to be a better and hopefully the best version of us. Having compassion is about listening and thinking. Listen to the unsaid as well as what is being said. Think deeply about what this means for the actions you'll take and how you will articulate these actions. Compassion is about making the decisions that matter to make people stronger and more capable rather than happy. That being said, remember that compassion can also be as simple as saying thank you." And the second key element here, according to Emmanuel Gobio, is hope, which he says is not blind optimism, by the way. It is about a shared goal plus the will and the way to achieve it. Followers want to know their leader is willing and ready to lead them to a better place. Achieving this can be as simple as being present and available. Call around to support. Make yourself available to listen and reiterate your willingness to help. End quote. So that was Emmanuel Gobio. And then about the same time, near the start of the pandemic, I got an e-newsletter from leadership guru Patrick Lencioni, one of my favorite authors, who put it another way. He says that regardless of your situation, we have to be exceedingly human. And by that, Lencioni means that you should demonstrate your concern for the very real fears and anxiety that your people are experiencing, not only professionally and economically, but socially and personally as well. Even though you don't have definitive answers to all of their questions, don't let that keep you from listening to them and empathizing with their fears. And contrary to conventional wisdom, you should not be hesitant to share your own concerns with your people. They want to know that they can relate to you and that they are not alone in their concerns, end quote. And then finally, there's this from best-selling author and leadership expert Tom Peters. I spoke with Tom recently, and in his new book, it's called Excellence Now, Extreme Humanism, Tom calls listening the most important job that a leader has. And he asks, did you, leader, spend 80% of your last conversation listening? And did that listening translate into 100% attentiveness? And then Peters says, quote, if you ain't exhausted after a serious conversation, then you weren't really listening, end quote. So you see the common thread there, right? Communication, collaboration, humanism, the importance of listening first, right? So important. And really, that's what Andrew Codd does for a living, right? He listens to folks in various roles throughout our profession, throughout the world in our profession, really. So who better to speak to about, you know, about how to make our profession more future ready, right? He does this for a living. We talk about some of the ties that bind accounting and finance pros throughout the world, the importance of that human element to the future of our work, and some of his favorite lessons that he's learned after more than 300 episodes of his podcast. You know, I mean, sometimes it feels like I've been doing this show forever, and we're only up to what, episode 141. He's at 334 and counting, folks. Pretty impressive. He's pretty insightful too. This is a great conversation. I'm really glad you could be with us this week. Here is my conversation with Andrew Codd. Andrew, thank you so much for being here. I'm kind of curious, and you're in Ireland, right? Southern part of Ireland? Where exactly are you?
Yeah, so thanks, Bill. Look, I'm in a lovely part of the world, the southwest of Ireland, Cork, just near the Atlantic coast there. So very fortunate to be here, not say in a city where we used to work was in London. So okay. not in a big city. So it's not nice bit of breathing room around here at the moment.
What's the last year been like over there? I mean, my perspective is pretty much these four walls in my office, in my home in St. Louis, Missouri, and I haven't really talked to a whole lot of people the world over. So, I mean, how's the year been for you?
It's funny. I know. Like we live in on a rock in this Atlantic Ocean over here, but it's been broadly similar for a lot of people. Like where we are now based, we're out in the countryside. So we've got fields and nice views around us, and we're not too far from the sea. But like a lot of other folks listening, you know, confined to the home, have been lucky to get out for walks during most of the time when the weather's good. For those of you who've been to Ireland, it does rain a lot here. So any break in the rain is a good opportunity to get out and get a walk in and some fresh air. Yeah. But like we've had those in cities as well, where they've been fairly cooped up, and I think people are getting, you know, a little bit tired of the situation and looking forward to having some sort of summer. So thankfully, in a lot of countries, the vaccination programs are rolling ahead, and hopefully some restrictions are lifted. We get to enjoy things a bit more.
God willing. Yeah, it's been a long haul, and hopefully we get to enjoy each other's company in person in the not too distant future. That would be awesome.
It would be great.
It's been a crazy year. I want to talk a little bit about your podcast. So Strength in Numbers, and I was kind of overwhelmed. I mean, there's over 300 episodes in there. You guys have been doing this since 2017. I mean, tell me a little bit about how you got started. Why did you gravitate toward this type of thing?
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one. Like I'm a trained accountant, chartered accountant. Why would I want to get into podcasting? It certainly wasn't something I left school it wasn't an itch I had to scratch or anything. I suppose there's three real reasons, Bill. The first one in my mind was I suppose I did a lot of mentoring, and I don't do as much now, but I used to mentor a lot of younger people coming through in our professions. And you know, I thought I was fairly well read up on things, so I did my CPD, CPE and kept on top of things, but there was so much I didn't know the answers to. So I found myself increasingly reaching out to my network that I had been building up over the years and seeking their advice. And then I'm thinking, I'm taking it back to this one, Rajid. It's like, well, maybe if I just record it, then I can share it with more people. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose I think just before we started the podcast, I'd written a best-selling book, The Audacious Finance Partner, and that had done well on Amazon in four different countries. And they said, yeah, you should probably do a podcast. You'd be very good at that. You're very good at conversation. So I said, yeah, sure. Look, I'll give it a lash. And that was the main driver, really, was trying to help more and more people. I suppose the second piece was, look, like a lot of your listeners, I wouldn't have achieved the things I did in my career without the help of others, particularly mentors. I've been very fortunate. One of my regrets was probably not finding the value of mentorship sooner, because I grew up thinking I knew all the answers. And right. very immature helped me. But I've grown up, and as I've grown up, I value the advice I've got from the mentors around me. So I felt that was another way, and was a great way of giving back to the mentors who'd invested in me, their time, out of respect. And I suppose the third one was, even in the last few years, Bill, our profession has changed so much. And if we're to remain relevant into the future, I just felt that some of our more established accounting organizations maybe weren't moving as fast as we needed to be. Still a lot of gray hairs on chairs. It's getting much better now. Seriously, the representation of our profession is getting much better now. But I just feel it wasn't as fast at the time. So I just lost my patience. And I said, look, well, I'll drive this if no one else is going to. And it's even great now to look out and see so many different podcasts or finance professionals, accountants, people associated with our profession as well. I just absolutely delighted I'm seeing the growth in that, and all targeted to helping people, you know, remain relevant and, you know, get more out of their careers in finance and accounting.
I'm curious throughout all this time, last 3.5 years or so, and all those countless conversations, what's been the most surprising thing that you've learned from doing this show?
Yeah, I suppose it's an interesting one. I had very little expectation going in. I was just thankful people agreed to come on and be interviewed and share their great careers with our audience and so on, and their stories. But I suppose reflecting on it, Bill, I would suggest maybe it's maybe the agility or resilience of our profession. There's just so many people who are doing great things out there, and maybe we just don't get the limelight, like accountants and finance, but we're generally a support service,
right,
at the end of the day. And we tend not to factor massively in big bright lights, but you know, even during the pandemic and before that, it's just we were really doing really cool things, whether things with technology, analytics, helping even on things like that are less dollar and euro driven, even around things like intangibles, you know, trying to help our businesses make better decisions and figure out like what the future looks like. So yeah, I just think that I was just impressed with the resilience and the innovation that's already going on out there. Just, yeah, like our future is really bright if we can better leverage that resilience and that agility to cope with whatever's thrown at us.
Resilience is such a great way of putting it. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. We, you know, even before the pandemic, we were talking about things like, remote work and working in the cloud and adapting new technologies like AI and things great like that. And we've been talking about that for years, right? And then like overnight, somebody flipped a switch and all of a sudden we had to actually do these things immediately. And the profession responded in a, you know, if you had asked me before, would they be able to do this? I'd probably think, yeah, some of them could, some of them were really going to struggle. But then when push came to shove, everybody really, I mean, resilience is just a fantastic way of putting it. This profession responded I don't know that I'm really surprised by it, but I'm really proud of the way that, you know, that they responded in the way that they did under such intense pressure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is it, we've been doing accounting for thousands and thousands of years, you know, like I think we do the technical side rather well, and right. Maybe we just don't give ourselves a pat on the back, just actually how good when the push comes to the shove. We're really good at rolling our sleeves up and just getting stuff done because we have to. I guess that principle we come with, of trying to ensure that we're supporting organizations in the best way we can, that they remain going concerns, whatever the environment's throwing at us, we're always trying to do our best. And if you look at a lot of our early training, whether we're an industry and it's about quarter end close or a monthly close cycle or making sure that all the transactions are full and complete, or whether it's through audit or preparing account returns, making sure we're not making mistakes, we are very diligent to begin with, you know, like we're very used to rolling the seas up when we have to. So I am sort of surprised just how resilient we are. But then if I look back, I think we've really good training to prepare us for that. Now, that said, right, I as part of my training when I was in practice, I was shown how to make a proper cup of tea. That's been a good skill during the pandemic, funny enough. I had a lot more cups of tea than I was used to. But, generally it's been good training, I think. It stood us in good stead.
Yeah, that's certainly, I think, one thing that people in this profession have in common, no matter where they are, is that sense of resilience. I'm kind of interested, you know, as somebody who works and interacts mostly with folks in the profession on the other side of the pond, as people here in the States are fond of saying, what do you think some of the ties are that bind accounting and finance pros throughout the world, right? I mean, so we certainly have cultural differences or even differences within our own profession based on where we are. But what are some of the things that bring us together, some similarities or journeys that we all share?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, Bill. And knowing the way you got such a successful podcast, great questions. I would suggest, though, for me, one thing that jumped out when you said that, right, was curiosity. And the reason why I think that jumped into my head was, I think a lot of accountants out there like to really understand how things work. It does surprise me, like the perception of accountants as being counters. Like I actually talking to someone yesterday, funny enough, who actually is in practice and is doing more virtual CFO type work at the moment, advisory work. Mm-hmm. You know, he was quite frustrated when he went from industry into practice and tried to get people to think a bit more. And this was actually over in the UK, was trying to think, like, okay, it's not my job just to do the accounts, but maybe to ask questions to understand the challenges of the person's accounts I'm preparing. Well, actually, that's what we do when we start our training. We do that. And maybe some parts of us, it gets bred out, but definitely those that are stepping up, coming onto the podcast, when I'm out at conferences or virtual events or wherever, talking with folks out in our profession, it's just the quality of the questions coming in, the curiosity, the willingness to learn, to develop, to remain relevant. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I feel that accountants, finance professionals, we have a great affinity, say, with engineers who like to build things end to end. And maybe that just aligns back with one of the great assets of being an accountant. We tend to have a really good visibility of how the transactions add up, a broader view of things, a sense of where industries are going or where businesses are going, the economy. We've this really great training to deconstruct that all. That binds us. It's also the investment in training and that knowledge to be able to distill what's going into the numbers. That's really important too. And I think that those sort of things are with the realm of the curiosity, I think they do tend to bind us. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, interviewing someone in China or in Africa, in Asia, there's great work being done at the moment out of the Middle East. Yeah, the massive curiosity coming out of there, you know. And part of my team is actually based out of North Africa. Just amazing, the talent as well. And I think that's another thing with these technologies, the Zoom calls and so on. It's a great leveler. So, you know, I just got to see that's good competition for the rest of us in more established countries like the United States, Ireland, United Kingdom. You know, we really need to keep raising our game because there's such great talent out there and they're eager. They sort of remind me the way the Irish were probably 20, 30 years ago, really hungry to learn.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's a great way of looking at it. And I think that curiosity, it's almost a prerequisite, you know, for the job. It's you've got to come with that kind of natural curiosity. especially now that, and you mentioned that that stereotype of bean counters as well, which is kind of sad that it's still that it's still out there and we're still dealing with it, because you know, a lot of that type of stuff is the stuff that these new technologies are doing for us, right? That kind of rote number crunching stuff, we don't have to worry so much about that anymore, and we can focus in on that kind of natural curiosity and figure out how to become more strategic and add that value.
Definitely. But as I said, like, we've got these great assets, you know, like, I think that's where a lot of people are maybe struggling, though. If, you know, audience is saying, well, I don't really disagree with what Andrew's saying there, you know, well, like, I would sort of challenge back and say, well, let's separate our identities from what our role is. And our role is really is to help business make better decisions, our organizations be more like a going concern. So if the transaction stuff and all that stuff's been taken away, all the adding up and whatever, then we still have loads more assets to go and drive value. And that, as I said, those broad perspectives, the curiosity, the great training to deconstruct things, help people make better decisions. Yeah, I think we've got really good, bright future with the profession we have across the globe.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt at all. Now, back to your show real quick. I love the name of the show, Strength in Numbers. And what I like most about it is that kind of double entendre there, right? And two parts to that. And the first to me is really kind of obvious. It's the power of the profession itself, right? Of finance.
Yes.
Let's start with that. I mean, what is the strength in the profession to you in those financial numbers? What kind of role do you see finance playing in a world that's changing as quickly and as radically as it is?
Yeah. Well, I do apologize to you, Bill, and your audience. Like, the name probably isn't the most creative one out there.
I love it. It's a great
my skill set.
It you tells know, both sides people. Of those stories, you know?
It does, yeah. But I suppose it did come to me. So when I was thinking about and going back to those core reasons for why we started, the one thing was community. Again, like I just feel that as finance professional, actually, I tell you what, there was just more recent, actually, there was the ex-CFO of the World Bank, Bertrand Badre, wrote a book called Can Finance Save the World? Mm-hmm. And like, that was sort of where he put into a question what I was thinking a few years ago when I set the podcast, which is essentially, if you think about it, a lot of our community are involved in supporting better decision makings. Now, if we can produce content that's relevant to them and that helps them enjoy their work more and find more meaning in their work, but also drive better decision makings because they're aware of better advice, better ways of doing things, mistakes to avoid. Mm-hmm. From the hard won lessons of people who've been willing to share, like, this is the mistake I made, you know, try not to repeat it, so that they can access, you know, better ways of doing things. Well, if we're driving better decisions as finance professionals and as accountants and driving our organizations and businesses that we support forward, then that's got to be good for not just our own jobs and roles, but those of our community, our friends and family around us as well. And then as you extend it out, if you've got all those finance people making better decisions in their organizations, then if you think about it, that's better for society as a whole, because all those things add up.
Yep.
It creates more opportunity for everyone and better results overall. That's my thinking anyway.
Yep.
So hence that sort of community impact of strength in the numbers.
Right. No, I think that's brilliant. And I've heard that, you know, it might have been from the source that you mentioned, but that notion of can finance change the world? And it's not a silly question.
No.
There's so much strategic value that I think folks in this profession can offer, especially now that technology is freeing up more of their time so that they can add that higher value.
Definitely.
It's not such a silly question. Finance can definitely play a role in that, you know?
Yeah, well, if you think where we evolved from, we were there to record transactions so business people could make better decisions, freed them up to say, okay, so this is the transactions of my business. So if we go back to ancient Babylon when we're recording these things on clay tablets, you know, it's like, all right, that's my transactions, they're my assets, they're my liabilities. So, you know, this is where I need to rest, this is my cash situation, you know? And like, one of my favorite books is The Richest Man of Babylon. That sort of does some very basic principles that we hold as truths as accountants and finance professionals that still are true today, you know, particularly the value of compound interest and an understanding the financial and not overstretching ourselves. And that's, again, where we add a lot of value as professionals, is making those better decisions. It just means some of that stuff we used to do on clay tablets has been automated for us, which allows us then to work more on the better decisions piece.
Yeah, I was just writing down the name of that book, The Richest Man in Babylon. Last time we talked, you mentioned another book, Factfulness, I think it was.
Oh, yes.
Which I'm, yes. I immediately went out and bought, and I'm like right in the middle of it right now and loving it. So I figured,
oh, I'm glad you are.
I'm going to have to read everything that you mentioned now, because the first one has been so good. All right. So the flip side of that name, Strength in Numbers, we talked about the profession and the role that finance plays. But to me, the flip side of that is kind of the human element behind, you know, the future of our profession. It's about this idea that we're stronger together, that relationships matter, that, you know, there are ties that bind us together, and that it's not all technical, right? There has to be that human element. And I'm kind of curious what you think about how accounting and finance pros around the world can work closer together to build more relationships and build a better profession and serve our clients in a better way at the same time. I mean, what does that look like to you?
Yeah, well, I think we have a great advantage over a lot of other professions, is that we actually have sort of some very common principles and common language. May not be identically the same, but there's definitely some sort of harmonization going on, right? So we have this huge advantage. Actually, someone said to me recently that it's a bit like in medieval times, where the pirates in the Mediterranean, they may have been from different countries, but they had a common dialect that they could talk to each other. We have this language of numbers. So right. We already have a tremendous advantage. And I think, again, recent events have accelerated some of that coming together faster than I think a podcast or people on our own can go achieve. The things have been leveled. I mean, one of my common bits of career advice that I've heard on the show and that I share with others is that the power of like going onto sites like LinkedIn or company websites and identifying who the key decision makers are, or putting in some search terms to see who is good in a particular area.
Yeah.
And then getting on a Zoom call with them. We don't have to travel, say, from Boston over to London or Paris or Frankfurt to get some insights of people who might be specialists in a particular energy, like an industry like energy or utilities, or, you know, South Africa is very strong in robotics at the moment. You know, if I want to understand how to deconstruct that industry and share some knowledge from where I'm coming from, very easy now to get on someone on a Zoom call and just share like some of the key things to avoid or lessons to learn. So I do feel that technology and more openness, and actually I think there's a lot of value in what they call co-opetition or collaboration nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe competition isn't the way forward, and secretiveness is that sort of transparency. That's a core principle of accounting, is just being transparent.
Yep. No doubt about it. In fact, you know, I was having this conversation with somebody just recently about the paradox almost in that we're working in a world that we keep talking about all the changes that are impacting the profession. And a lot of those changes tend to be focused on technology and where all of that's going. And paradox to me is that the skills that we really need to master are not learning how to use technology better. It's these types of skills. It's human skills that bring us closer together and help us work better together.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's funny, like I had a number of conversations this week, Bill, right, with folks, and even today, this morning here in Ireland, and it was really that I feel the way things are going now. Yes, we've loads of technology. In fact, we're probably spoiled for choice on the technology side. And I was a bit concerned again, like in recent times, maybe we were chasing too many shiny objects and distracting away from maybe investing in conversations and relationships and stuff like that. But where I'm going now with my thinking is maybe we just need a bit more help with the structure and how to structure those conversations. Like we have this other section on our podcast, which is the Monday Memo, and researching for one of the upcoming episodes. I was looking at the number of meetings accountants and finance professionals have, whether like within their practice work with clients or within organizations. And boy, I can't think of any other group that actually has as many meetings or needs to be present in as many meetings. Right. And like, how do you know which meetings to go to? You know, we don't learn that on our training, you know, which interactions. I mean, the whole point of meetings is to share thoughts, ideas. It's a forum of sorts. Some then become decision-making, some become sort of team building, but essentially it's to meet with people to understand something. And I don't think we've really maybe got the right structures around that yet to realize the full potential of the value we have to offer with our training and with our backgrounds and experiences yet. So that's where I think maybe some of the attention needs to go going forward for folks, is into building the right structures and picking up on the right bits of advice. So that's what I'm trying to formulate in my head, is how can we be more, with all this technology, we're more productive on the things that we need to deliver from outcomes. But in terms of getting to those outcomes, particularly from the meetings perspectives and on the personal side with people and interacting with others, I think probably needs a bit more work there.
Well, and as somebody who, I mean, you mentioned earlier the power of mentoring and what you've gained from it as a mentor and a mentee. I mean, there's a certain element of that in there as well. I mean,
that's one of the things.
Yeah. I'll be seeking those people to share ideas and knowledge and experience with to better our own lives.
But that's the great thing. Finding Bill is more often than not, when you reach out to someone to learn something or benefit from their experience, most people are very giving of their time. Yeah. And again, it's funny. We did a podcast with someone from a large financial services organization, and their internal comms team got onto me and said, can we take a copy of your episode? Because we'd love it to share internally. I said, great. You know, that's the whole point. It's like, that's why we record the show. Yeah. But even on these one-on-one conversations, they're part of that meeting structure I was sort of talking about as part of the research, Bill, was I think you need to have those mentoring conversations, making sure that not only are you gaining experience from having a mentor, but also, you know, mentoring other people as well.
Sure.
So like, and they talk a lot about this reverse engineering, like no joke of it. During this pandemic from at home, my son, my 14-year-old son, has been my tech support. All right. So, you know, if there's been a problem with technology, he just has a better intuitive understanding of it than I do. So my point is, it's like we all have something to offer, no matter what generation we're drawing from, country we're drawing from, industry or whatever. There is always something useful to share. And I encourage folks to at least have one mentoring or mentee type conversation every single week as part of that meeting structure to ensure that, you know, we're keeping, I'd say, just keeping our understanding and that curiosity going, because that breeds new ideas, new thinking, and better ways of doing things.
Yeah, so important. I mean, you know, none of us have all the answers, right? And
favorite mantra.
That's why you and I do a lot of what we do, right? So we can have these kind of conversations with folks who are, I mean, certainly you're one of those smart people, certainly smarter than me, but you know, it's all about learning from each other, right? And sharing that with other people. So
I suppose I always say to people is that, like, I may not know the answer to something, but I probably know someone who does.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have to say, Bill, another cool thing about the work we do, right, is I'm really bad at asking for help. And that's maybe why I was slow to ask for help finding a mentor, right?
Right.
My first mentor was actually forced upon me, which was a great thing, by the way, because I probably wouldn't have found mentoring at all. But no, that I'm very comfortable, though, asking for help on behalf of other people. So if I have an audience member reach out to me, say, look, I'd really like to understand this more, could you put me in contact with someone? I said, well, actually, here's so-and-so, or we did this episode with this, and can point them to that. And it's searchable now. That's a great thing about the web. You can sort of search, these conversations get transcribed or whatever. You can search them for what's relevant to you. So finding information has never been faster than before. So why not make use of this opportunity for mentoring? And it has that human element as well in building a relationship. And I find, when someone mentors you, they're sort of investing a part of themselves in you, and they want to see you be successful. So again, why not make use of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to that point, I'm kind of curious, who's been your favorite guest so far, or most memorable?
Oh, that's...
what sticks out for you?
That's a bit of a loaded question, because we've had a lot of guests on, and yes, I'm going to dodge it a little bit. I'm going to dodge it a little bit, though. I'm going to say we've had awesome guests on. Absolute, like, and some of them turned into very good friendships, actually, for me personally as well. And I'm very grateful for that. That's but amazing. What I would say is we always ask our guests, you know, for their best bit of advice. Mm-hmm. And the most common one that comes up, and it may be a strange one for accountants to hear, is actually it's like, be yourself. Mm-hmm. And they actually do mean it, you know, be genuine. And what they mean that is actually understand who you are. Take the time to really understand, like, what it is you want out from your career, you know. So understand, it's like some people call it the tombstone test, you know, where like people are standing on your tombstone and that, you know, they're discussing your legacy. It's like, what do you want your legacy to be? You know, what would excite you? What would make you jump out of bed in the morning to go and give your fullest effort?
Right.
You know, what would really motivate you? What do you want to be known for? And by the way, it doesn't have to be changing the world. It could just be, you know, being the best you can be in what you do. And then it's like making sure you're doing that every single day. And that's the best bit of advice that keeps coming out from the mentors we have on the show, is that be yourself. And then they talk about all the supports that are available to help you be yourself. And if you've got a gap between the person you sort of see yourself being and where you feel you are now, then the way to close the gap is to seek out advice on how to do that. And some people get coaches, some people have counselors, and some people reach out to other finance professionals or people to mentor them to help close that gap. And again, it comes back to relationships and that strength in numbers that we do have in our profession.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic advice. That notion of, you know, I think I heard somebody else put it another way. It's like your legacy, right? That legacy idea. And I think you alluded to, what do you want on your tombstone? And it's, you know, when I kick, I don't want my tombstone to read, you know, that I hosted a podcast. It's got to be more than that, right? It's got to be what kind of difference or what kind of mark did I leave behind? And I think that's the kind of thought process that I think a lot of people
don't
spend enough time doing, and we really ought to. That notion of being yourself is so important.
It's a bit like you say, it's like the mechanic in their car. You know, the mechanic is so great at fixing the rest of us cars, right? But when it comes to their own car, they drive a banger and it's probably not as well maintained as it should be.
Right.
I think, like, you know, as accountants, we know how a business works and how to get the best out of a business. Maybe we need to try and supply some of that thinking to ourselves. And it's just being like playing to your core strengths, you know, knowing like who you are, what are your strengths, what you enjoy doing, how to maximize those. Just apply some of our professional advice to ourselves, and I think we'd be fine. But to your point on legacy, we had a guest on the show, and he's very, very, like some people you just think, oh my God, they're just so wise. That was the feeling I got of him. He was from Africa, living over in the UK. And one of his mentors was the UN Secretary General. I mean, what a cool mentor to have. And he had a great advice by saying, you know, like your legacy becomes someone else's heritage. And like, that's the way I look at it as well. It's like if you're playing on a sports team, you know, you only wear the shirt or the jersey for a short period of time. So how can you leave that in a better place so it's good heritage for the next person coming along to step into? Right. And I just sort of look at that in the future, because we're going to get older, Bill, hopefully, and have good lives and whatever. No. You know, the next generation come along are going to be the ones driving the decisions in our organizations and with clients in their businesses and so on. So how can we leave a better heritage for them to step into so that we don't wreck the world, so to say? There is a planet still left for us to enjoy together.
That's a great way of looking at it. Well, in that light, I'm kind of curious, Andrew, what you think the future of this profession looks like. I mean, when you look at it down the road, what do you hope will become as a profession?
I'm too biased on that one, Bill. You know, I'm too rose-tinted glasses, you know. I want to see the optimistic side of it. Look, all I can say now is even today, there's just so much opportunity. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of accountants out there who've lost their jobs in companies and practices and so on, but they found other jobs very quickly, because it's such a great skill set. And again, that natural curiosity, I mean, the whole point of having an accounting function or an accountant supporting a business is to add value in some sort of way. So I feel as a profession, there's so many ways we could add value. Interestingly enough though, right, there is a downside risk before I sort of finalize that thought, is when I started as an accountant, I thought I'd be working in a finance team with other accountants for the rest of my career, you know. I even thought I might go back into practice as well and maybe be a CFO of sorts, or a virtual CFO of sorts like that. But as it's turned out, is that I now lead a team and I'm the only accountant in a finance team. I've got data scientists reporting into me, software developers, people who are very good at managing projects, people who we hired someone who was an event manager, you know. These people can pick up a lot of the skills that were traditionally done by accountants per se, but they're bringing something a little bit extra. And I'm shocked that I'm the only chartered accountant in the team, the person who went away and qualified as an accountant and did the hard yards that way. So like, that is a risk. If we don't embrace the value we can offer, then yeah, the opportunity in the future is not going to be rosy for us. But given that we've been delivering value for so long, You've got a great brand. And I think a key one in organizations and with businesses nowadays is that idea of independence. You know, we're like the whole idea of a company, whether we're coming from a practice or from an industry, is there's that big problem of the principal agent, where the shareholders are trying to solve for the problem of the agents making decisions in their own best interest and not for the shareholders. Yeah. We can be that objective sounding board. And when it comes to money, people's emotions can get the better of them, but we can separate ourselves from that and be the objective sounding board, you see. So I think as long as money is sort of helping the world evolve around and everything's sort of driven by the numbers, I do feel there's a lot of value for us to play. Maybe we're not known as accountants in the future. Maybe we're known as something like business counselors. Mm-hmm. You know, so like people have psychotherapists, people have accounting psychotherapists or finance people or business counselors. So I think we're a bit more than just the numbers. We're probably a bit more business counselors. I think that's probably where, if we're going to have success in the future, it's leveraging the technology to become better counselors, probably.
That's how finance can save the world right there. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's a title for a great book.
Oh gosh. Andrew, this has been a joy. This has been a great conversation and I'm really happy to have met you and that you could join me today. Thank you for your insights and for joining me.
It's been a pleasure, Bill. And thanks to your audience for lending their ears for a few moments and hope they found it similarly useful.
Really great stuff there from Andrew Codd. He is host of the Strength in the Numbers podcast. Head on over to sitnshow.com. That's sitnshow.com. You'll find every one of their more than 300 episodes there. You can subscribe, read their blog, watch videos. Really great stuff there and a different and really insightful perspective on the profession. Strength in the Numbers, add that to your podcast library. And don't forget, this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking here about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all I got, gang. Have a great week. We will talk to you again soon.